are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, BC. This radio is diverse, independent, and always yours. Check us out at cjsf.ca or search CJSF 90.1 FM on SoundCloud.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Anyone in the San Francisco Bay Area who has been socially conscious and listened to radio in the past few decades most likely knows the sign-off, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. In more than three decades, a Jewish Nebraskan who was transplanted to San Francisco in the turbulent 60s and became an alternative newsman on the original FM progressive rock station KSAN, later on KFOG, and has described himself as a kind of mongrel bohemian with a beatnik head and hippie heart, has delighted and challenged audiences throughout the country. His name is Wes Skupnisker, and he's the focus for this edition of New Dimensions. Wes Skupnisker is a Buddhist meditation teacher, author, radio commentator, and performer. The best of Nisker's radio commentaries from the 1960s and 1970s were collected in an hour-long National Public Radio special entitled A Decade in Your Ear. He's also the founder and co-editor of the Theravada Buddhist journal, Inquiring Mind. He has studied Buddhist meditation for three decades with teachers in Asia and America. And since 1993, he's been leading his own retreats and workshops in Buddhist insight meditation and philosophy at venues internationally, including the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. He's an affiliate teacher at the Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Woodacre, California. His widely praised books include The Essential Crazy Wisdom, The Big Bang, The Buddha and the Baby Boom, Buddha's Nature, and Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again, Handbook for a Spiritual Revolution. Join us for the next hour as we turn our heads around, listen to our hearts, and wiggle our toes with our guest, Wes Skupnisker. My name is Michael Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Scoop, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a delight to be here in this studio and be with you.
Yeah, we've been doing it a while, haven't we?
Yes. We go way back. Really? And it just gets better and better.
Better and better.
We improve with age.
I think so, too. I certainly feel good. I feel good. You feel good?
I feel good sometimes, yeah. Uh-huh. When I feel myself, yeah. When I'm present, I check in and I say, how am I feeling? And usually I come up with pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So this book, Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again, Handbook for a Spiritual Revolution, what's the motivation to do this one?
You know, the motivation was to delight and impart a message that I've been interested in, obsessed with over the last couple decades, and that is a shift of identity from thinking of ourselves as psychological beings, primarily individuals with our individual stories and dramas, and beginning to identify ourselves as Homo sapien, as earthling. Now, there's an identity for you, you know? I mean, we live on this rock, and we have appeared due to the struggles and efforts of many different forms of life over the last 3.5 billion years or so. And what if we could take that story personally and really begin to sense ourselves as integral and integrated with all the rest of the life of the planet. We really need that kind of shift of identity if we're going to survive and not destroy our home. And so that's been of primary interest to me to work on that shift. I've often felt in my Buddhist meditation practice that that's what I was doing, that paying attention to the breath and the heartbeat and watching my mind sort of have a mind of its own, I realize how much of nature, how much of the past is actually living through me rather than me doing anything. And so I wanted to reemphasize that message. And I also, my mind naturally goes to humor. I don't, it just has been doing that ever since I can remember. I find our human situation odd, funny, absurd at times, and basically unknowable. And, we're all struggling to try to find some answers and reasons. And But I have to laugh quite often.
If we go back to the 60s, even into the early 70s, so who are the characters that you remember most? Who are the characters that stand out for you?
60s, 70s? Well, I was always, as you said, and I really appreciate in your introduction to me, you said that I have a beatnik head and a hippie heart, which is how I described myself. I was really drawn to the beatniks. I was really drawn to Allen Ginsberg in particular and Gary Snyder, who kind of represented two ends of the beat movement. Gary Snyder being a serious scholar and a serious meditator and went off to Japan for 10 years, and Allen Ginsberg being a kind of social activist, kind of hero, chanting at anti-war rallies, and his poetry was very strong and kind of denouncing the evils of the world, and whereas Gary Snyder was much more in nature. And so those were the figures that I really was excited to. They were my heroes, and then I got to meet them and interview them on the radio, as how lucky. And I think all my life I've been attracted to jokers and jesters and comedians and, the tricksters of our society, who remind us, basically, that we really, we really don't know what we're doing here. In spite of all the answers that we've come up with that we would like to believe.
Growing up in Nebraska.
Yeah, that's funny.
I mean, that's funny.
Yeah, right.
Funny. I mean, how in the world, how did it happen that you came to California, came to San Francisco?
Well, it was a matter of how soon can I leave Nebraska and which direction should I go, to the East Coast or the West Coast? It was always, life was always happening on the coast. It was always happening in the city, I luckily chose the West Coast, I think luckily. I mean, I just love sensibilities of the culture of the Northwest Coast, Washington, California.
Yeah. One of the things I was struck by in the early part of Crazy Wisdom, Saves the World Again. Actually, Serves the World, too. That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
The Department of Wisdom. Tell us about the Department of Wisdom.
Oh, yes, the Department of Wisdom. Well, if elected, if I were president or king, we have all these intelligence agencies, and all they are doing out there gathering facts and figures. And
the word intelligence is rather loosely used.
Yes. Why don't we have a Department of Wisdom in the government? And the Department of Wisdom would be run by historians and anthropologists and some mystics maybe and some
poets.
Poets. Oh, yes, some poets and some jesters and some comedians. People who think a little bit more with the right hemisphere than just the left hemisphere, which the generals and economists, and politicians, they think their left hemisphere all alone, So for a balance of powers, a Department of Wisdom would add the right hemisphere. And, I think its time has come. We're definitely in need of some wisdom.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if in the halls of Congress, in the Senate chamber and the House chamber, that there would be a clown and a court jester that would run down the aisle, and make fun and poke fun. It would just so be great.
Absolutely. Well, they used to have it in the King's Court.
Yeah, of course.
We just haven't made room for it in our democratic institutions, our parliaments, but it's definitely needed. I have a whole in the performance piece that I do. And also in some of my books, I talk about the intentional decline and fall, and that the United States should actually resign as a superpower rather than putting the world through a big struggle and trying to hold on to our power and privilege, that we should see the writing on the wall and actually resign. And then I have a transition government putting together some public works projects called, under a 5-year plan called the Great Leap Backward. And I have all sorts of government agencies that I would set up. Aside from a Department of Wisdom, I would set up a Department of Meditation and Therapy, which would set up deprogramming centers around the country and teach hyperactive American workers how to become less productive members of a less productive society. The government would pay people by the hour to work on themselves.
Great idea.
Yeah, it is a great idea, you know. And anyway, there are any number of new government agencies I have in mind. I don't know when we'll get there, but maybe someday, maybe in my next lifetime.
Yeah, well, you'd probably be able to send a copy of the book to along to Obama.
Yes.
You were also talking about who's God. Who's God is, you know, who is God? Who's God? The different cultures, different people. It's like, you know, whose God is better, whose God is different. And the summit meeting of gods.
Yes.
I like the summit meeting of gods.
Well, I've always had this, you know, I've always had this fantasy that someday, you know, the heavens will part and we will hear this booming voice saying, "You all got my name wrong," you know. But it's so obvious. I mean, if you look at history.
And I forgive you.
Yes, and I forgive you, right. That's right. How do you remember the kicker? It's so obvious, and that's what, if we had a Department of Wisdom, we could actually point out to some people that, you know, if you look back at history, for instance, the descendants of a family living near the Mediterranean could have gone from believing in Kronos to believing in Zeus to believing in Jupiter to believing in Jehovah and then adding Jesus in just 5 millennia. So even among the gods, there is occasional regime change, right?
Right.
And somebody said, the God you believe in is as determined by where and who you were born to as your language. You know, I mean,
was the God Italian?
Well, you know, God, my image of God is an Italian, right? I think a lot of our images of God are Italian here in the West because the Italians painted God, you know, more than anybody else. You'll remember the Jews said we weren't supposed to have a graven image of God, which saved us a lot of money on statues. But then the Italians inherited the Jewish God and couldn't resist trying to paint him. And so we got that guy with an aging bohemian God, you know, yeah, with the long flowing white beard and the long—
reaching out to the hand of—
Yes. Okay, so you want me to read here? I'll read
please,
this. I have a modest suggestion for how we can deal with humanity's God problems. First of all, we call all the gods together for a summit meeting. Maybe this meeting could be held on Mount Olympus or somewhere in the Himalayas where there are already a lot of gods around who could host the gathering. There will have to be separate tables. Bacchus needs wine, whereas Buddha won't touch the stuff. Demeter wants corn for dinner. Jehovah likes lamb. Zoroaster wants candles for a centerpiece, while Thor would like an ice sculpture. Once we get all the gods together, we would beseech them, all of us beseeching our own particular deity, to do humanity a great big favor and decide on a common name. Since I'm the only one working on this project, I'll take the liberty to propose this new name. First of all, if you'll notice, many of the names we already use for deities end in the syllable Ah. Jehovah, Allah, Brahma, Tara, Diana, Krishna. So maybe we could get all the gods to accept the common nickname Ah. It's a perfect name. Ah is the first sound that most of us make when we are born. Wah, wah. And the last sound we make as we die, crying or sighing, ah. So the first moments of our life would automatically become a prayer, and the last moments, ah, would be a sigh, signaling our complete release from this hard duty as a human. I suppose people could still use their special tribal names for God, but emphasize the last vowel, ah, and we would all agree that we are talking about the same ultimate, almighty, Ah, who is totally awesome.
You're listening to Scoop Nisker, and Scoop is the author of many books, but this one including Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again, Handbook for a Spiritual Revolution. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions. So my guest is Scoop Nisker, and Scoop is the author of a number of books, including The Essential Crazy Wisdom, The Big Bang, The Buddha, and The Baby Boom, another book called Buddha's Nature, and which is available in paperback as well. These are all available in paperback, actually. And you can go to the website, scoopnisker.com. And so that's Scoop, S-C-O-O-P, Nisker, N-I-S-K-E-R.com. You can also get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. So, Scoop, there was a little more to the naming of the gods. So can we continue?
Yes. Ah is one possibility for God's name. Another possibility is to give our highest deity the name Ma, which is the same word in many human languages referring to mother. Then, instead of looking up as we pray toward our Father who art in heaven, we would look down at the earth, the womb of all life, the goddess who the Greeks called Gaia. There's another Ah for you. Maybe we could even use both names, Ah and Ma. We could divide God into two, a male and female, yin and yang, just as it was for a few clever humans in our ancient history. Ah, Ma. Ma, Ah. Aha, Ma. That the possibilities for songs and praises are endless.
So, like, these little vignettes. Talk about the stand-up show that you do.
I don't know. It must be 15, 20 years now. I've been doing little comedic riffs and songs at various Buddhist venues and transpersonal psychology conferences and New Age venues. Anyway, the last 10 years or so, people encouraged me to, you know, take it out further into the public. And so I've actually kind of organized an act, a monologue, a comic monologue with a number of original songs, and began performing in legitimate theaters. And I've been performing in San Francisco at the Marsh Theater, and I just did a couple of weekends at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. And these were sold-out shows, and people are really responding because my show is about evolution, and it's about the Big Bang, and it's about the baby boom generation. It's got a lot of sort of big overviews, you know, of history and physics and biology. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of jokes, but it also gives people a real sense of being part of something bigger than just, you know, today's culture and poking fun at this celebrity or that, you know.
Perhaps we could hear the Baby Boomer song.
Absolutely. Now, let me just preface it by saying that I talk about how you don't get to choose when you live, you know, and here we are in the year 2008 or 9 AD. We're here we are at the end of the aughts in AD. But that's, of course, if you follow the Christian calendar. I mean, I don't think it's actually fair that we should all have to follow that calendar. There should be separation of church and date.
Yes.
And, you know, the Jews are still in a decade of the 60s, 57, 69, the last time I looked.
And the Mayans, they had a 13-day lunar calendar.
Yeah.
They didn't have weekends.
My sense is that, you know, a division of time is rather arbitrary. So why don't we bring all humanity together under the same calendar? We could start counting from, say, the beginning of our species, which would make this about, you know, arguably the year 1 million, be a little hard to write on your checks, but it would give us more of a sense of where we're coming from, how long this trip has been. Of course, if we're part of this universe, then this is the year 13.7 billion ABB after the Big Bang, that would really be hard to write on your checks. Of course, if you're Hindu or Buddhist, you know, you have universe after universe after, I mean, you know, it's just, you don't know what the hell time it is, you know. So, and I think that's why they invented the here and now. Just keep it simple, you don't know what time it is. Anyway, that's a long preface for this song, actually. The song is about how we don't choose the time that we will be alive in, the cultural moment, the historical era. And if we look back at history, we realize that most of us who have been living through the last 50 to 75 to 100 years here in America, in the West, in the overdeveloped world, We've been having a golden age. It's been a time of unprecedented freedom and abundance. So this song is about all the things that we were brought up to believe we could have and get and do and eat during our lifetime. One thing, however, that we didn't figure on and that we may have started to learn is that desire is endless. If there's any one lesson our civilization has taught us, it's that desire is endless. And also satisfaction in life is geared to expectations. And some of us grew up with very great expectations, told that we could have it all.
You can go anywhere you want to go, eat anything you want to eat, own anything you want to own. That's right, you can be anyone you want to be the president of the USA, or be bent any which way. You can be a fool, be cool, be a somebody or nobody home, a contender or pretender to the throne, be a drone or the queen bee. Be a buyer, a seller, a singer, or a teller of tales, or a lifter of bales. Be a banker, a golfer, a wanker, a rolfer, a CEO, a CPA, an SOB, an MFA, or really go far and be a rock and roll star. Or maybe you could even be a deity, be God by God. Then you can be everyone you want to be simultaneously. You can be, you can own, you can eat, you can go, you can own. Oh yeah, you can own anything you want to own. Own a house or three, maybe 20 TVs, get a piece of the rock. Why not own a whole block? You could even own a wilderness, and I guess a mountain could be yours, or a lake, or an island. You could even own a country of your own, call it my land. Own 1,000 pair of shoes, any cure for the blues, the pills, the thrills, don't worry about the bills. You got credit cards, checks, you can even pay in dollars. If there's anything you want, just holler. Own a classic piece of art, the original rendition, or the first edition of your favorite creation. Maybe you could even buy yourself a revelation, or buy yourself a new start, a new part, a new nose, a new chin, a new heart, a new do, a new you. 'Cause you can be, you can own, you can eat, you can go, you can be, you can eat. Oh, you can eat anything you want to eat. You are the main man, top of the food chain man. You can eat high on the hog, eat the legs of the frog, the brains or the stomach or the toes of any creature that you meet. And if you don't like their color, you can dye them before you fry them. And if you don't like their texture, you can get them tenderized before you bite into their thighs. Have some fauna, some flora. Come on, have some more. Have some fowl, some fish. Have another dish. And don't forget the cow. And how would you like that prepared? In a steak or a burger or a stew or moo-shoo. You are the main man, an American man. You can eat any cuisine on the planetary scene. Japanese, Javanese, Indian, Armenian. Fast food, hot food, raw food. You got food, so eat. And then go. Yeah, 'cause you can go on vacation just to visit any nation. Take a notion, get in motion, and just go to the mountains or the prairies or the oceans white with foam. Leave home. Now you could go to Walla Walla, but I don't know why you'd want to, when you could go to Oaxaca or get a nice palapa in Hawaii or Fiji. Or why not go to Fiji and go diving in the reefs, or roll yourself a spleef in Jamaica, or take a nice safari to Nairobi or the Gobi. Or go up the Himalaya to Shambhala, or up the Alps to Valhalla, or go visit the Maori, or go looking for Satori in Japan, man. Oh, yeah, but if you really, truly wanna, you could travel to Nirvana. That's right. And escape the desires of this crazy creation. Uh-huh. Get off the wheel of birth and death and reincarnation. Uh-huh. Get off the wheel that keeps you always being and owning and eating and going and being and owning and eating and going and get off the wheel. Get off the wheel.
Great piece. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Lots of images there.
Yeah, a lot of images. And, you know, we had so much to desire. that what we, a lot of us, ended up wanting was the end of desire. It's not that easy to have too many options, too many choices.
Yeah. Just saying, when I say lots of images, it reminds me that when one listens, like here we are listening to this piece, and it does bring up pictures. That radio creates pictures in the mind, which is so wonderful. It's so much more clear than television, where the images are already provided for you. You don't have to work. You
know? Yes.
So when you listen, and particularly a storyteller like you, it just, you know, it's like your mind roams through a whole landscape of possibilities.
It's true. It's true. And I know that you and, I mean, I also, we've been in radio all our professional lives, and we love it. It's true. I call it the happy medium, because it doesn't provide you with all the information. It really engages you. You have to participate. You have to be there. Fall into that sound, those voices, those images.
So one of the things that intrigued me was the First Church of Scientific Science. And you're someone who got, through meditation, you got interested in science.
Yeah, I in college, you know, growing up, I wasn't really interested in science. I saw it as just a lot of facts that you had to memorize and regurgitate, you know, and the names of the elements and the, you know, how the blood system works. But then as I began to meditate, I really, first of all, I think I got in touch with my biology, you know, that I had never really been connected to the fact that I was a living, breathing being. But I also, and I also began to realize that science is really about me. I started to take it personally, you know. And more as I read about, say, evolutionary biology and how, you know, they discovered that we have a fully functioning reptilian brain and a fully functioning mammalian brain inside our skull, and, of course, the new human brain. And there's some speculation among serious scientists that we use the new human brain mostly to make excuses for the behavior generated by the other two brains. But, as I'm sitting in meditation, I read a piece like that, and I'm sitting in meditation, and I'm seeing, I'm experiencing what the evolutionary sciences are telling me about how my behavior happens and how decisions are made in my system, in my nervous system. And it really started coming alive for me. So, I found that.
I'm speaking with Wes Skupnisker. He's the author of Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again, Handbook for a Spiritual Revolution. And the website is skupnisker.com. That's S-C-O-O-P, nisker.com.
Yeah, or wesnisker.com, W-E-S-N-I-S-K-E-R.
Either one.
.com. Yeah,
either one will get you there. Okay. And you can also get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions.
Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life,